The Girl Who Never Was, Memoirs of a Survivor, by June Unknown. How I Found My Voice. I'll never forget that first case where Seth had me testify during the sentencing. He said I could have just given him a victim's impact statement and he'd submit it. When he told me that, gave me that out after all the work he'd put into finding me and prepping me, put my needs before his, that's when I knew I couldn't let him down. By then, I was 19. I realized I couldn't live like most people do, but I still had no idea where my place in the world was. Living like a hermit, alone, except for my paintings, felt like having a limb amputated. Living with others? That was being drawn and quartered in front of a crowd, watching, judging my every response. I wanted a reason to leave my solitude. I needed someone I could be with. Seth gave me both. And so much more. But that was later. Now, I had to survive this first trial. The guy was already convicted, Seth kept reminding me.
No matter what happens, nothing will change that, so don't worry.
I don't think worry came remotely close to how I felt when I walked into that courtroom. Walden came with me since Seth was busy up front with the other lawyer and the defendant, a guy named White. Is there a state of being beyond panic? When your heart beats so hard and fast that it pushes your being out of your body? That was how I felt, floating, tethered to reality only by the tightness that constricted my chest and made it impossible to swallow. Like my body was an anchor, and I wasn't at all sure that I didn't want to cut it free and just drift away. But then Seth turned to scan the row of seats behind him, and he saw me. He looked so proud and happy to see me. No one had ever looked at me that way, not even Daddy. Like I was special, like I was important. To hear White's lawyer and friends and boss and church deacon and wife tell it, he was the victim here. Poor, overworked, overstressed shoe store manager. He'd turned to porn to alleviate his tension and accidentally downloaded photos from the wrong site. Never mind that there were over 3,000 of them, all preschool-aged girls. White pled for leniency. This wasn't his fault. His family needed him. Would be ruined if he was sent to prison. And the judge kept nodding, like he was buying it. Even smiled at White's wife. Then it was my turn. Seth introduced me. I was so nervous, I didn't hear what he said. And I approached the podium. I smoothed the pages of the statement I'd carefully crafted with Seth's help, my sweaty palms smearing the ink. Didn't matter. I can't really read very well anyway. But I'm good at memorizing things I see and hear, so I was going to recite it from memory. Except then I looked at White. At all the people sitting behind him, supporting him, his fine, upstanding wife, his fine, upstanding deacon, his fine, upstanding paper boy. Whoever these people were, they looked at me like I was some kind of vile, corrupting, ungodly creature sent to seduce fine, upstanding men like White. To them, I was the one who should be locked away to protect society. To them, it was all my fault. Heat blazed through me. My hands shook the entire podium, so I closed them into fists and placed them onto the printout of the statement I would never read. "Are you okay?" Seth whispered from where he sat at the table beside me. I nodded, still unable to speak. The silence lengthened. People shifted in their seats, whispered behind me. The judge cleared his throat and nodded to me to start. Still, I was silent. The judge, his patience ended, glared at Seth.
Mr. Bernhard.
Before he could finish, I opened my mouth and began to speak. The first thing I learned when I was little was that girls are to be seen and not heard, I said, focusing my entire being on the judge. Seth had told me that in almost half of child pornography cases, judges would ignore the sentencing guidelines and give defendants less time than even the minimum called for. Not this time. Not if I had anything to do with it. After living the first 10 years of my life never being heard, I'd like to thank you for the chance to speak, to add my voice to the ones you've heard today. I gathered my breath, totally improvising, but the judge was paying attention, and that was what mattered. I lived the first 10 years of my life only knowing one other person. That person was my whole world, literally. I lived for him and him alone. When he sent me away, when I grew too big for him, I thought I would die without him. Learning how different my childhood was from everyone else's was a shock. I didn't know how to read or write or do math beyond counting. I didn't know how to talk to other people. Didn't even know how to play with kids my age. How could I? I'd never met other kids or any other adults. It was years before I could catch up enough to go to school. I managed to graduate high school, but left college after a year. I didn't know how to be around people, especially men. Every relationship ended with me feeling ashamed, guilty, and abandoned. I live a fragile existence, unable to trust myself, unable to trust anyone else, unable to focus or do so many things normal people do. I can't drive a car, have never been able to hold down a job. I can tell time on a clock, but have never learned to translate that into anything meaningful. All of which you can blame on those first 10 years. You probably wonder what Mr. White and his fascination with underage girls has to do with my failures. Why should he be held accountable for my inability to make up for those first 10 years? 10 years of my life that he and others like him watch as entertainment with no thought to the fact that the girl on the screen, the girl growing up before their eyes in thousands of images, that girl deserves a life beyond serving their sexual gratification. That girl, me, deserves a voice, deserves a chance to be heard. I swallowed hard. A feeling of power surged through me. I'd never felt that before. Every person in the room was listening to me and only me. Now that I'm old enough to understand what was taken from me, I'm in constant fear. Fear of someone like Mr. White recognizing me and coming after me. Fear of men like him using those images of my childhood to coerce other victims. Fear of men like Mr. White using my images to recreate that horror for other little girls. Fear that because of my stolen childhood, the violence and horror will never end. I paused, trying to figure out how to wrap up. Wished I could remember anything from the statement Seth and I wrote, but it's too late now. Mr. White may not be the man who stole my innocence or my childhood or my voice, but he's the man who has stolen my dignity, my privacy, and my future. He's the man who paid for it, who made it profitable for me to be victimized. He paid money for my innocence. I've been diagnosed with depression and PTSD and panic attacks and generalized anxiety, but these fears that haunt my every waking moment and that twist my dreams into nightmares, they are not unrealized, vague, neurotic anxieties. You know that. Mr. Bernhard knows that. And Mr. White knows it as well.
if he's honest with himself. These fears are real. They will torment me for the rest of my life. Will knowing that I have one less predator to fear by asking the court to sentence Mr. White to the maximum allowed by law and to request some measure of accountability in the form of financial restitution give me any measure of comfort? I hope I'd use the right terms from Seth's coaching. For 10 years, I had no voice, I continued. Now that I have the power to speak, I can tell you honestly, yes, I will sleep better tonight knowing that justice has been served and that Mr. White will never harm anyone again. Then I will wake up tomorrow, scared and alone and cowering, too afraid to step foot outside. But I will walk outside in a world that for me is filled with danger. Because despite everything taken from me, I have the power to set things right. One thief at a time. One predator at a time.